Hello and welcome back to Ex Tumblr Girls, a podcast hosted by two ex Tumblr girls turned modern Tumblr women. I'm your host, Tori.
I'm your host, Carly.
Let's talk about Tumblr. Happy New
Happy New Year.
Remember in the last episode when we said that there would be another one before the end of
Yeah.
2023?
Well, that was on us for thinking we were going to record over the holidays.
Yeah, we thought wrong.
Yeah. The holidays for me were very emotional. Like, and then looking back, I'm like, I was very emotional. Like, I was crying like every day, like, and for no reason. Like, really? Oh, wait. I was on my period. Never
I
mind.
was
There was
just
a
going to say being in your
reason.
childhood bedroom
Yeah, on your period.
on your period.
Like, can it get worse than that?
That's literally like a trial from God.
Yeah.
Meanwhile, I took off work from a whole week, and so I did literally absolutely fucking nothing.
I love that though. Like, that's what you needed.
I sat my ass on the couch. And I'm trying to remember if I even watched anything. Like if I watched a show all the way through or anything. I don't remember watching. Oh, I know what I did. I watched like 3 seasons of Great British Bake Show.
Oh, did you? I don't really get that show, but I
I
know like a
love
lot of
it.
people really love it.
I really love it. And it inspired me so much that for Christmas, I made a two-layer cake with homemade whipped cream in the center and homemade buttercream all
And
over
it
it.
looked delicious, and
And
I'm
it
upset I didn't get to
was
have any.
delicious. And it was.
I failed at making cake pops.
That picture you sent me, they looked great.
They didn't taste great.
Oh.
And I did the part, like I baked the cake and then formed them into balls. And then my sister, she did the dipping part, putting the sticks in them and dipping them, which apparently is the harder part.
Yes.
And she found it very difficult. And they were just way too sweet. I'm not a baker. I'm just
I
not.
feel like most people say cake pops are too sweet because it's cake held together by frosting dipped in
Yeah,
chocolate. Like,
that's true. That's true. And they were
still.
also vegan. And so I feel like vegan desserts, I always find them a little bit more sweet, but
Because
that
they're
might.
adding sugar to compensate for the fact that they have nothing delicious in them, like
Wow.
milk.
We're gonna get canceled. Like, that's what we should have put on the bingo board. You get
Oh my God, I
canceled
get
for hating
canceled
on
by
vegans.
vegans. Listen, I'm gonna hate on vegan food sometimes. Sometimes I think it's fair because I like dairy. I do. There, I
I
said it. Sorry to the
cheese. I love
alternative milk
cheese.
people.
I had myself a glass of whole milk with chocolate chip cookies, and it was delightful.
Like, it's become an embarrassing thing to say, and many will judge you for this statement, but I think whole milk tastes fine.
I love whole milk. Whole milk is the
Do
best
you
milk.
remember when, like, there was like a few years there where you actually like couldn't say that you drank whole milk, where you had to be like,
Yeah.
no, it tastes gross. I know that. But like, why was I lying like that? It
I don't
tastes
know.
fine.
Because like every time I go to a coffee shop and get like a latte or something, they're like, is 2% okay? I'm like, actually it's not. And they think I'm gonna say like oat milk or some shit. No,
My
I need the full
college
fat.
did not serve whole milk.
Oh my God.
There was
That's a
2%,
crime.
there was skim, and there was soy.
Skim is a crime against humanity.
I think I drank 2% milk or soy milk the whole time I was there. I
I
didn't
just
drink
think,
it like by the glass. I mean, in my fucking cereal, by
yeah.
the way.
Whatever. I'm still on the cow's milk trend. Like
Yeah.
I'll have almond milk sometimes, but I'm sorry.
This is the way we're reintroducing the pod to 2023 is discourse about milk.
But also, like, the other thing that vegans are missing out on is like I made three meatballs the other day, pork, veal, and beef. They were amazing. Like, as I was eating them, I was like, this is what a meatball is supposed to taste like. Like, if you ever had a turkey meatball, that shit is disgusting.
They're okay, but like pork, veal, and
Compared to
beef,
the, compared to like
that's
a
how they're
three-meat meatball.
supposed to be made. Like, I grew up with an Italian grandmother who made sauce and meatballs like every 2 weeks and would like give us containers of them frozen. And she only made pork, veal, beef meatballs, like combo of all three.
Yeah.
And it wasn't even like it was just ground from the grocery store. It was like from the butcher. Like,
Wow. Took it
I grew up
seriously.
very Italian spoiled because I was being given fresh Italian food all the fucking time.
Yeah, now you have to cook for yourself, like
Now I
every
do have
other
to cook for
person.
myself, which is very sad, but I love cooking and I cook with whole milk, so everything tastes delicious.
I have whole milk in my fridge right now.
So do
Nobody
I.
can take that away from me. The world gives us so little. Like,
I can't take away my whole fat cheese.
no, they can't.
Also, I have a bone to pick about no fat yogurt. Like when you go and buy Greek yogurt, all of it is like low fat or no fat, and there's no whole fat Greek yogurt, like at Wegmans. There is no
No, it's
whole
only they
fat.
only have plain, and then like stuff that actually tastes good, like vanilla that you want to like eat in a bowl,
Why
it's
does
all
and none of it
non-fat.
have whole fat in it? The whole fat that's in yogurt is fucking good for you.
That's why I add whole milk to my yogurt. I don't actually.
I
I
literally like
don't.
I could go on a tangent about America's resistance to the word fat just in the context of food products with whole fats in them, because everyone like wants feels better when they buy something that says like low fat or no fat, even if the product shouldn't have had whole fat and it would have actually been fucking better for you.
Yeah, we can't get into
We can't get
that.
into the yogurt debate
Well,
here. There's too much passion tied up in
we haven't even gotten to our chit chat yet. Our notes. Okay,
Yeah,
I'll go
what's on the
first.
docket?
So there's even some stuff. It's been so long since we recorded, and so now I like everything is coming into my head at once. Number one, I have long nails for like the first time
They
ever.
look gorgeous.
I don't know if I'm gonna be going back. They're the extension or like things with
Their
dip.
tips.
Yeah. Because I can't grow my nails that long. I'm so jealous of people that can grow their nails long and they don't break all the time. But I might get them done one more time and then see about that, and hopefully I have a job by then and I can afford to do that frequently. I can afford it this month. We'll see about in the future. I'm listening to solely K-pop,
Yes,
and
you fucking are.
it was literally like January 1st I had to drive back to my apartment, which was 6 hours, and I spent pretty much the entire time listening to K-pop. Like, it was a switch, like going from listening to
Because
solely Fiona Apple to solely K-pop.
we
It
had
kind
this
of gave me whiplash.
conversation. I think it might have, I don't remember if it was before or after the last time we recorded. And if it was before, I don't know that we talked about it on the pod, but I was giving Carly and her boyfriend like a quick glance into the world of K-pop that I've been addicted to since I was 17 years old. And you said, I feel like this music would just be really good to drive to. And it's true, it is, because it's got like a certain beat to it, like in
Yeah.
every song, because K-pop is its entire own genre. Like it has its own sound, the way that like
Yeah.
R&B or indie or does. And it's just something about it like keeps you fucking awake at night. Like
Yeah. No, I've had Chill Kill stuck in my head like since January 1st. It's just there rattling around.
I woke up this morning and it's kind of like a random new habit where like When I go in the bathroom to brush my teeth, I like put on my first song of the day to like, so that I don't get bored while brushing my teeth, you know? And
we got to do what we can.
Today I woke up and I was like, fuck, I just want to listen to Super Shy by New Jeans because it's such an addicting song. But
New Jeans, they're really good.
Most mornings I wake up and I want to listen to Stray Kids. That's kind of where I go. Today I listened to 17 a lot. That was really fun. But yeah, I'm very glad you're getting on the K-pop wave.
Yeah, I'm definitely not educated right now. Like, I'm just listening to the music.
But that's
I've never been the type to get into like the artists. Really, the only artists I care about is Fiona Apple
and Hozier
and One Direction and Hozier. But I don't really care about like learning about the artists too much.
No, yeah, you're not like a dive into their history type stan.
No, no. But we'll see how long this lasts because I'm definitely going through a phase, but it's not a bad phase. So we'll see.
I think like finding a new genre of music you like doesn't mean you have to like commit to it. K-pop, it feels like it stands out because it's got such a stan culture, but like it's okay to just like some K-pop songs and have them on your playlists for sure. With other music.
Yeah, the problem is I don't want to listen to anything else right now. Yeah. Like I tried to listen to Fiona Apple and I was like, I felt like this deep unsettling feeling where I was like, I don't know if I could listen to this right now. So we'll see. Other media I've been consuming, Ted Lasso. Almost, I've got like 2 episodes left before I finish that. And I love it. And I think about it all the time. And I know you won't ever watch it. And that's okay.
I have seen it. I've seen like an entire fucking season.
There.
Which I watched against my will.
Yeah, you have trauma about Ted Lasso.
Ted Lasso.
I also just finished this video game called Sea of Stars, which was just so good. It was so good. And I like it was just it's kind of hard to explain the plot, but basically you play as a solstice warrior where like you were born on the solstice and you have like either the sun god or the moon god's like energy in you, and you have to protect people, but then there's a big betrayal, and then you have to like fight it. Okay, it's a lot, but if you like pixel art games, it's amazing. And it's turn-based combat, so it's not stressful.
Yes.
I absolutely loved it, and I'm like craving other sort of like media that's like it. Like I added a bunch of fantasy books to my to-read list because I'm kind of bored by the realistic fiction I've been reading. I'm just kind of gravitating towards the same thing over and over again. Like the book I'm reading right now is called Death in Her Hands by Otessa Moshfegh, who is the same author as My Year of Rest and Relaxation, which I hated.
Interesting.
But I really like the premise of the book, so I'm trying it out, and it's just okay. It's very short, so I'm hoping I can get through it pretty fast.
Yeah.
But I am questioning why I'm putting myself through it, considering how much I hated My Year of Rest and Relaxation.
You really hated that book.
I like the writing. It was just
yeah
so aggravating. But yeah.
Yeah, I feel like a genre switch up is good in many ways. Every now and then. I feel like I kind of underwent like a random kind of shift in music taste toward like the middle to end of last year, where I stopped listening to quite as much like pop punk music. And like, I'm not gonna lie, I don't even really like listen to Water Parks that much anymore, wow. Which like used to be my favorite band.
You have
of all
a tattoo.
Time. I do have a Water Parks tattoo. But I mean, I'll never give up on Halsey. She'll be my favorite forever until I die. And I stand by that and nothing can take that away from me. But I kind of like shifted to listening more to like indie pop. And now I'm like, if I'm not listening to K-pop, I'm probably almost exclusively listening to indie pop. I don't really know where the shift came from. Probably my addiction to Eliza McLam. But yeah, I feel like that's my new go-to kind of music. And so maybe I need a book switch up too, because I ended last year. I read 29 books last year. My goal was 30.
Slay.
I was like,
that's basically 30.
I was like 40 pages away, but you know, I would have read so many more. And that book, if you've been listening to the podcast for a while, around the beginning of October, I read that book, Pretty Girls by Karen Slaughter. And I'm not even kidding. I haven't finished another book since then. It literally, I didn't read for like 2 months after that book.
Yeah, so maybe crime is not for you.
Yeah, no, I don't think I'm going to read psych horror anymore. I just think like it just like put me off so bad, which really sucks because I really like psych horror books. I find them really interesting, but I just feel like after that, I just can't read them anymore. And so I've been reading a collection of short stories by Nicole Krauss, who wrote The History of Love, which is my favorite book of all time. Tied for with The Secret History, whatever. But
I was gonna say
she's a wonderfully talented writer, and I used to not really be into short stories or short story collections, and now I'm really enjoying them because I can read one in like a sitting, you know, like in the morning or at night, and then close the book, and it helps me get through reading a lot faster. So I'm just working my way through that one. And then I have a lot of nonfiction I want to read this year.
I also have a lot of nonfiction to read.
Yeah. My life update is that I'm in the fucking trenches, dude. I had a month and more like I had a 3 weeks. And now I'm planning to reread Man's Search for Meaning by Viktor Frankl, which is about the necessity of suffering. If that gives any indication as to where my brain is at.
I did lend you a book. It might not be.
I have it.
For where your brain is at. But there is this nonfiction book. It's, I don't know if I would call it a memoir, but it's about this woman's life called I Am, 17 Brushes with Death. And it's all, she just tells her story through her near death experiences.
Oh, damn.
And it's very good. I remember I read it on a cruise ship in like 2 days.
Yeah, I am revisiting media about suffering. I've also been revisiting a lot of media about cannibalism. As a metaphor, my sister bought me a couple of books for Christmas, and it was funny. I gave my siblings like a list of things that I might like, including my to be read list. And my brother said he looked through the list and he was looking to see if there were any that his wife might like also to read, because she's also a really big reader. And he was like, oh, I could, you know, get my sister and my wife the same book and they could maybe read it at the same time. That'd be nice. And he was like, and then I looked through the descriptions and every single book on your list was about cannibalism.
And I was like, cannibalism is not for everyone.
It's just what's in right now. So yeah. I have A Certain Hunger and Tender is the Flesh on my shelf. So those are soon to be reads. I'm also in my documentary watching phase where I've kind of watched through everything on Netflix that I think I'm going to enjoy. So now I'm just watching documentaries. I watched the one about the Twin Flame cult. That was crazy.
Wait, I want to know if you've seen this one, because my mom just texted me. She said, if you want to binge watch the most crazy documentary ever, watch The Curious Case of Natalia Grace. You seen that
one? No, not yet.
She said, it's so unbelievable.
Okay, she was serious. My favorite documentary of all time is This Is a Heist, history's largest art heist, about the Maria Gardner Museum in Boston. It's like mafia, it's crime, it's art history. It's so
it's like Ocean's 8.
Yes, very. Except for the fact that the heist was done really poorly, so not at all.
Oh, okay.
Also,
and Sandra Bullock wasn't there.
No. This will be my last thing. I have set myself, I don't really do New Year's resolutions, which I'll explain later in this episode. I feel like I've mentioned it vaguely before, but I don't really believe in New Year's resolutions. I think it's stupid to lock yourself into, or to try to lock yourself into something that you can technically fail after 48 hours by not doing it 2 days in a row.
Yeah.
I think something quantifiable like that is useless. But every year I do one anyway, where I tell myself I'm going to listen to a new album front to back every day to encourage me to listen to new music and find new songs. And eventually I start running out of ones by artists that I know, and then I have to start listening to like random shit. So I've done a handful already. It's not every day, but I'm doing it pretty consistently so far, you know, on day eight. So far I've only been listening to indie pop. So far I have listened to, I'll give y'all the rundown because it's like four. Let me see. I saved them all. All of This Will End by Indigo D'Souza. Really enjoyed that one. I really like her, and I'm going to continue listening to her. I will say some of the songs kind of just sound the same. So not like a ton of them stand out in my head. Stranger in the Alps by Phoebe Bridgers.
Good album.
But even more guilty of all sounding like the same song. Still a really good album. I'm obsessed with her voice. And then the third one I did was Emails I Can't Send by Sabrina Carpenter, which was a fun album, but I'm not going to lie, I wanted more from it. It kind of didn't give enough pop. It hit a lot of genres, which is really cool, and I usually appreciate from an album, but I think I just wanted more pop from her. Because her new song Feather is like, I listen to it like 15 times a day. It's if my previous years of Spotify Wrapped are anything to indicate, usually whatever song I listen to the most in January is my top song, so Feather is on its way. And then the last one I listened to all the way front and back was The Rise and Fall of a Midwest Princess by Chapel Roan. That's been my favorite so far. She's fucking awesome. What a cool album. I can't imagine anybody else in the world making it. So that's my beginning of the
year. I like that though. And if you ever need any, I have like 8,000 songs saved.
You gotta like give me a list. So I want to start listening to like the most out of the box shit possible. Like,
but yeah, you will listen to Fiona Apple.
I have listened to Fiona Apple. I listened to, is that album called Go Fetch the Bolt Cutters?
Yeah.
I have listened to that front to back.
I'm just kidding. I know.
I'm just saying I have given her a try. I know. It just doesn't jive with me.
It's okay. It's okay. It's better when she's special for me. No.
I want to like listen to some really like, I want to listen to like hyper pop and like 90s R&B. Like I want to find like the most like niche weird genres and listen to just like a couple albums from them, you know?
Yeah. I'll find you some.
And at some point this year, I'll be starting my Substack where I will probably detail the albums because I did finally get my Substack URL. So, but yeah, that's me starting the year in the trenches. Can only go up from here.
That's the spirit.
And actually, that's a really good way, I guess, to frame this episode because this episode is about hope.
Yeah, about growth.
Hope.
At your own pace.
Period. how do we introduce this? There isn't really like a solid theme here.
Well, I can talk about the crazy takes I've seen on Tumblr recently. Like one of them being that art is actually bad. Like specifically modern art. And I just love that they have no idea what modern art means. It just love that. I've also been getting a lot. What was the word that was tagged on that post I sent you earlier?
Hypergamy.
Like it's very like divine feminism, or not even divine feminine,
It means to marry rich. Like,
yeah,
it's used like the word monogamy, but it means to marry someone of higher social strata than you.
Yeah. I don't know why Tumblr thinks this is what I, these are the accounts I want to
it is
follow.
Really wild to me, the shit that you get suggested. You get suggested like the most
I don't even
invalid
know.
discourse of all time.
I
and
don't even
I get
know.
suggested like silly pictures of Snoopy. Like, we are on such different sides of Tumblr.
I also got one early. I think I sent it to you. It was, what was it? Oh, books can be for any age. Like,
oh my
there is
God, this
no
was
age limit.
ridiculous. We actually,
Like,
I think, need to have a whole episode on discourse about like media consumption and like being responsible for your own feelings toward the things that you see and
yeah.
don't like.
And then saying that kids should be allowed to read whatever they want.
Like, it's
Anything.
just.
They should be encouraged, actually, was this take that I saw.
Yeah.
I also saw one earlier that said that the whole point was that women need more rest and relaxation than men to be in harmony, like biologically. So on that note, we're going to be talking about the actual good advice that we've seen on Tumblr, which.
It's few and far between.
Yeah.
Unless you're looking
yeah,
for
that's
it.
true. If you follow the right people,
yes,
it's all good.
And
It's really
the
just
right
the
people
recommended
is
posts that got
stuck in
me.
April. That blog is life-changing.
I
That
think I do follow them
whoever
too.
runs Stuck in April is just always having the most like esoteric wisdom of all fucking time. Like 8 times a day, every single one of their posts is a hit. But yeah, usually when you go on the internet, you see things that you hate and that make you viscerally upset. And then if you're Carly, you read the comments until you're more upset. And
Okay, at
also, if
least I
you're
know my
Carly,
flaws.
then the internet suggests more of it to you. But if you look for it, such like we did with the episode on hashtag words, there are actually some redeeming genres of content on the internet, and specifically on Tumblr, that I think, I don't know if it's quite so unique to Tumblr. I feel like it kind of is, because I don't think you can get it on Instagram. I think maybe you can get it on TikTok in the right like niche doses.
Yeah, I think
But
that's the main difference is that TikTok is so big, but Tumblr is pretty small, like
yeah.
comparatively. And the type of content that you and I see, I mean, this the stuff that we both see is probably stuff that's being on a lot of people's dashboards.
Yeah. I mean, I'm talking posts with like 300, 400,000 notes, which is a fuck ton for Tumblr.
Yeah.
I mean, a post with 400,000 likes on TikTok is like nothing, which is kind of crazy. Anyway, I don't think you can get this kind of wisdom on Instagram, and certainly not on Twitter.
Yeah. I think
So
maybe a
yeah.
20-minute TikTok, but I like that on Tumblr, like you can have something that's longer.
Yes.
And people really, they write essays. They,
Long
and
form
the grammar is
content.
always, I mean, not always, but most of the time, like pretty accurate.
Long form content, I think, is having its resurgence. I think people
Yeah.
are like getting tired of being force fed like 10 second clips that are trying to sell you something. And so the pendulum is swinging back toward like, I want a long thing that is thoughtful.
Yeah.
And Tumblr provides that to us.
It does.
So we're just going to spend the next however long, hopefully not more than like an hour or even less than that, telling you about the things that we've seen on Tumblr that, like any good poem or piece of art or just really thoughtful thing, changes you forever chemically. And you think about and tell your therapist about, and it makes her happy that something else is giving you hope. So,
Amen.
Carly, would you like to start us out with some fucking hope?
I will. So I know I'll skip this first because I know you have that one. But there was one that it was kind of a combination of posts that all kind of have this a similar idea, which is to don't steal grief from later in life, which I just
Dude,
period.
that one has been on my mind so heavy. You give your piece about it, and then I will give my piece because this was also on my list.
So the two posts that I saved, one of them was actually a screenshot of a TikTok comment, which was it said like don't steal grief from later in life. It was on somebody's TikTok about like thinking about their dog dying. And then there was also a screenshot of a text message that somebody's mom sent them, and she says, focus more on fun stuff than bad stuff. Pain will find you when it's time for it to. You don't need to lay out the welcome mat and keep vigil for its arrival.
Whose
Better than
fucking
all
mom?
Instagram poetry combined.
Whose mom is saying things to this like them at 3:57 p.m.?
I don't even know. But I just love this sentiment. I think grief, I see a lot of content about grief on Tumblr, which I
You
think is, I
must.
mean, Tumblr. But I love that there is like a positive way to look at grief because I don't
Yes.
think most people look at it in a positive way.
No.
And you have to, like, there's simply no other choice because grief is just a part of life. And this makes it a little bit more bearable that you don't need to constantly feel the weight of it.
Dude, there is. Okay, I will share. I had one New Year's resolution that I made in kind of a whimsical manner of I'm going to experience poetry more often, which is to say, see the patterns and synchronicities. And acknowledging suffering as a necessity comes up so often in actual poetry, like written poetry. But once you start thinking about it, you see it everywhere of like, I have to feel this grief. And then like when you finally you get to a place of like acceptance with I have to feel the grief, then you start to see the poems and the arts and the posts and things that are like, how beautiful is it that I get to experience the grief? I always think about something Eliza McLam said on Binchtopia, which is that grief is love flowing through you in a different channel. Or like grief is love with nowhere to go, something like that. I, dude, the phrase don't borrow grief from the future has actually changed me. And I like I said, I've been in the trenches, and that phrase has actually really gotten me through it. And I've been trying to look at things as like everything happens for a reason. Like you go through certain things to teach you certain lessons. And really, I think the like this past experience was really to teach me like you cannot, well, this is what I took away from it is that my addition to don't borrow grief from the future is to not practice mourning, that you can't practice it. You can't get good at it. You can't prepare yourself for the grief. And then when the grief arrives, assume that it will somehow be easier. And I feel like really that idea of like the pain will come to you when it's time. Why would you extend the amount of time that you practice bearing that pain when you could
You
just let
either
it
hurt
happen
once or you hurt longer.
the fucking second arrow, dude?
The second arrow.
It's always the fucking second arrow, isn't it? But it's like I had to like tell myself like 500 times a day, I cannot practice mourning something that isn't gone yet. I cannot practice mourning something that isn't gone yet. And then one of my friends said to me, what if you practiced being hopeful about it? And I was like, did you just say? I was like, wow, if I'm not going to practice mourning, like maybe I could practice being excited.
But it's so much harder than it sounds,
Right?
but
To practice joy, because we are not raised to practice joy. We are living under capitalism. There is no joy to be practiced. And, but yes, there
course
is. But there is. And you must find
there
it. You must.
is. You have no other choice.
You literally have no other choice.
I bet you if I type verbatim, I mean, maybe not verbatim, a redacted version of my diary, it would go viral. It would get, because
You were on some.
I lay down the law in my diary.
She was thinking about Sylvia Plath.
I was. I need more from my diary, like, recently. Like, that. Because sometimes I just get on my soapbox.
I love that Tumblr post that said, like, the 1930s had Sylvia Plath and you bitches have me.
Love that.
Okay,
what's one of another post you have? Oh.
Okay. Mine is a really short one that, once again, changed me chemically, like any good poem should. And it is a simple phrase that I hope you all recall for years to come. Nice dichotomy, idiot. What lies outside of it? This phrase, upon seeing it on Tumblr some months ago, literally did more for me than 2 months in an outpatient DBT program did for me.
And it's basically just DBT.
It is. This is exactly what, if you could boil down Marshall Lindemann's 2-year dialectical behavioral therapy program, you would get nice dichotomy, idiot, what lies outside of it.
Sometimes all you need is one sentence.
And it needs to call you an idiot. Yeah. Like, there is,
we got
to
be real with ourselves.
There is something special about, like, having a bad thought or having a black and white thought or having an extreme thought and going, okay, idiot, that's a dichotomy. What if you didn't think about the dichotomy? What would then? And it works. And it works.
It does work. I really like that one too. I think that one surprised me that it hit so hard, because I don't think about, like, I never did DBT. I don't think about the black and white, my black and white thinking all the time. And then when it gets pointed out, I'm like, oh, it's pervasive. Like,
yeah, when you, like, when you drill this phrase into yourself and you have an extreme thought and then you go, okay, nice dichotomy, fucking idiot. What is on the outside of these two options? And all of a sudden, everything feels fine.
Yeah. No, I really do like.
It resonates.
So I couldn't find the actual post for this one, because I'm pretty sure it's been remade and shared in a few different posts. But the basic sentiment is to do it scared. And then later on, some people added do it weird and do it alone. And do it scared literally made me apply to jobs. Like, if it wasn't for that, I probably would never have applied to any job, because I was waiting to get over the fear. I was like, I need to let that pass because I'm so anxious. And then realized that was making me anxious.
We talked about do it scared a lot for a while.
Yeah.
I love when either of us is having a thing and we say, like, I'm just so nervous, and the other one says do it scared, and we're like, fine. Like, whatever.
I guess.
I saw a post that was, like, playing off this. It said, like, do it scared, do it alone, do it covered in blood if you must. Like,
quality advice from Tumblr.
It's the final girl motto. Do it scared, do it alone, do it covered in blood if you must.
Yeah. I really like the do it alone too, because another, like, truism is that, like, loneliness is also a part of life, like grief. And unfortunately, even if you're, you know, surrounded by people in a relationship, like, you can still feel lonely. And there are some things you do have to do by yourself. That, you know, that one is hard for me as well.
Do it scared is a really, you know, I encountered it on TikTok from these parents who are teaching their 5-year-old to snowboard. They've been teaching her since she was, like, 2. Her name is Cash. And they post videos of her learning how to snowboard and skateboard. And they keep, like, a mic on her. Like, that's how they make the content, whatever. They're monetizing her childhood. But the mic will pick up and she'll go, "I'm scared." And her mom goes, "Then what?" And then she goes, "Do it scared." And like, God, I wish someone had taught me that when I was five to vocalize, "I'm scared. Then what?"
Yeah, cured by anxiety
Like,
from the start.
literally does insane things for you. Okay. This is another one that comes from TikTok, which it comes from such a funny, like, it's one of those things where you're experiencing poetry. You're seeing things that you're like, this does not belong where it is.
Yeah.
Apparently the context, it was a guy who posted that he's learning him how to like spin swords.
Okay.
And somebody commented, "This will take 3 years." And he commented back, "The time will pass anyway."
Period.
That literally like hit my brain so insanely when I read it for the first time, going, "Oh, the time will pass anyway." Like, even if I don't do it, it will take just as long because every day will come and go regardless. Like, and it was really encouraging to be like, why not start now? Yeah, it's going to take a long time. That time is going to go by whether I do it or not. So I might as well.
Yeah. We can't go back. Like, so
I could either spend 3 years learning how to do it, or I could spend 3 years not learning how to do it and wishing I had. So
is this you telling me you're going to get into sword spinning?
Yeah, period. No, it's me saying I'm going to like, it was also a little bit freeing in the opposite direction for me of like, it's a good impetus for start now because the days are passing by whether you do or you don't. But I think in the opposite way, it's also good of like, the time will pass even if you don't become the master at this thing. The days will continue going by. Like, you will have more time to learn this. I think that was a nice reminder too, is like, this thing is going to take a long time, but the time will continue to pass as it happens. Like, you're not going to be stalled. There is something very divine about remembering that the days pass on their own without your permission.
Yeah, it also is scary. But when you think about it in terms of like accepting life to happen to you and like wanting to take control of your life by doing things, it reminds me of a post. I don't know if it was a post or like a quote or something I saw, but it was how you spend your days is how you spend your life. And like that is kind of the version of that post that hit home for me, because I spend a lot of my days doing nothing. And even though I have all the time in the world, and no, I have compassion for myself.
Yes.
But you know, when I think about everything I could be doing that I'm scared to do, like even like making art, because tons of reasons you'll be scared for making art, or you know, doing something new, going out, doing yoga, doing, you know, whatever. And I would like to like look back, you know, a year from now and think, oh, I actually did a lot this year.
Yeah.
Especially art.
I like, part of me does feel an aversion to like the way I spend my days is the way I spend my life, because it's very easy to get hung up on the things that you're not proud of the way that you spent your days. But I've, over the years, like, I feel like mainly since the pandemic, found a lot of solace in like counting all the very small things that I did in a day. And
gratitude.
God, the fucking gratitude girlies are always fucking right.
They're fucking right.
I know I talked about it on another podcast episode, but I listened to an Ologies episode on the study of happiness. And this researcher who studies happiness was saying that genuinely thinking of three things you're grateful for is like one of the best things you can do for teaching your brain to look at the world in terms of what is good about it. And I recently started practicing, recently as in like maybe a few months ago now, practicing a habit of doing things more singularly, of like doing only one thing at a time, even if that thing is like chewing my food, like not switching the TV channel while I'm like drinking my water, or not like checking my phone while I'm walking down the stairs. And it has made me able to look at my actions as like more things, because I'm not doing multiple things at a time. So like when I get to the end of the day, I can be like, oh, I went for a really nice walk today, and I saw something that was really interesting to me, and I drank a coffee today. And I also like the way I keep my to-do list for work, I separate everything out into tiny things. And I'm like, I completed 10 tasks at work today. That's a lot of tasks. Like, so I think, the way you spend your days is the way you spend your life can be a hard one to grapple with, but you have to like think about it the right way.
And I think about it in more positive, like I see where it could go. And what makes me not think about it that way is because at the end of this year, even though I had a really hard year, looking back, I'm like, I still did a lot. And over the past 5 years, I've thought, oh, you know, most of my days I spend doing nothing, scrolling on my phone, but I actually do a lot. And it's just like, it's actually just more so focusing on, you know, what I want to do more of, because what I look back and appreciate is the stuff I want to do more of, and I want to make that more of my life.
Yeah. I also, I just remembered on the topic of do it scared, for a callback to 5 minutes ago. I remembered a Tumblr post I saw that said, courage is not a thing that you have before something happens. Mm-hmm. It only exists in the moment that you do it. So like when people say like, I'm working up the courage to do this thing, it's like, no, actually, like, yes, I'm not going to discredit that phrase, but it's like the courage happens when you do it.
Yeah.
Not in the preparation for it. Like you can hype yourself up, but the actual courage itself only exists in the moment that you use it. And that was a really interesting thing to me, was that like, oh, I don't need to wait to build up the courage. I need to do so that I can exert the courage.
Yeah. That also made me apply for jobs.
Period.
Not that I got one, but hey, it's okay. I'm just joking.
Well, we're still not doing really scared. We're still doing much scared.
Yes. And alone.
I don't remember whose turn it is.
I want to say it's yours.
Okay. Well, this one is, unfortunately, I couldn't find the exact post that it came from, which I really, really wish I could, because I would have loved to share it. I did.
Maybe we'll find it. We'll find it by the time.
Yeah. Maybe the world will let me experience poetry and it'll show back up on my dashboard when I'm looking for it. I read this post a number of months ago. I looked through my archive to see if I could find it, and I couldn't. But it was about the concept of switchbacking, which is, to my understanding from this post that I read that I can't find, a way that people hike or walk where they, instead of going straight up a trail, they zigzag, and you go back and forth, and you switch back and forth, I guess is maybe what the word comes from. And it's lower pressure on like your ankles and your legs and your back, and exerts less energy from your body. So even though technically it takes longer because you're walking back and forth multiple times instead of walking straight up, it's easier on your body, and therefore you're actually more likely to complete the hike because you're not going to get overexerted and tired from walking straight up. And someone on Tumblr likened this to things that you could do in your real life. You don't have to walk straight up, and you don't have to push yourself just to get somewhere faster. this is actually the post that inspired me to start doing things singularly. I was like, oh, what if I didn't push myself to do everything the most efficient way possible? What if I just did things at the pace that I wanted to do them? And it's like really helped me be present. We're like thinking about like, I don't have to take the most efficient path forward. I have to take the one that's going to get me where I'm going in the best condition. Yeah. And it's also, there's something to be said there about, I don't remember if this was in the post or if I extrapolated this. I'm sure it was probably in the post because it's a good concept, but it's not more honorable to take the straightforward path that is harder, but technically faster. There's no praise in doing things that hurt. And so, yes, like theoretically, the switchback method might take longer, but the reality is because you're exerting yourself less, you actually probably will do it faster because you'll be doing it in a way that is gentler on yourself and you won't burn out. So it's been a very powerful concept to me of like, you don't have to take the hard way because it seems more honorable. In fact, the hard way is the hard way because it's harder. And because it the hard way doesn't actually like inherently yield the better result.
Yeah. And I mean, I also think it's good to do hard things. You know, it sometimes it does feel good, but when there's an easier way, like why not take the easier? Like if you're not losing anything, a lot of the times doing the hard thing is not, you're not getting anything more out of it.
Yeah, exactly. Like you don't get a prize for doing things in a way that makes you feel bad. And also like in the context of hiking, like doing it straight up and switchbacking, like when you make it to the top, you still made it to the top. You've done a hard hike regardless of whether you've done it in a way that hurts your ankles or not.
Yeah. I'm just getting flashbacks to the 10 mile
Jesus, hike I was thinking about that too. I wasn't even there and I'm thinking about that hike you did.
And there were times where I was like, I was at a switchback and I was like, this is the end. I'm going back down. And you know, that's another metaphor you can add to the metaphor. Is when you're halfway up, going backwards is going to be the same amount. Like it's still going to take effort to go backwards. I don't know, there's something there. There's something there.
I believe you. I don't know shit about hiking.
It's also it is way harder going down a mountain than up a mountain.
I think switchbacking is the thing that they do on the way down because you're less likely to fall.
Maybe it was just that it was like 3,000 feet in elevation, but there was switchbacking on the way up as well.
Yeah.
But
switchback both ways, bitch.
Yeah. Why the fuck not? So this one, I was hoping that you would pick this one, but I think you may have forgot. Because I know you talked about this in therapy, was this post I saw. Somebody, I'll just read the first line. My therapist just told me my problem is that I need to write more fan fiction.
I sent this to you.
And they go like, oh, you know, this sounds fake. But the logic about it is, first of all, engaging in the process of creation. 10 out of 10.
Beautiful. No.
Art, like... I'm sorry if this is controversial, but maybe art is good. It might be controversial to some people. So there's that. And then there's also, they talk about the quick dopamine that we're used to, like with our version of the internet now, and that fandom really triggers that because it's like a drug. But the slow dopamine that is more sustainable and engaging, we're not getting at as much. But those things take time and effort, like writing, like creating. Mm. So a way to balance that is writing about something that you're really passionate about and that's fun. And there's no, like, I don't know. What's the word I'm looking for? There's no, like, real consequences. Like, it's just for the fandom. And there's plenty of terrible fan fiction out there, and nobody really cares.
But also, like, you don't even have to publish it. Like,
no.
Writing fan fiction in privacy to entertain yourself is like, I actually am struggling to think of something that's like better than that. Like,
yeah.
Entertainment wise, in your private time of like reading a book someone else wrote. Yeah, amazing, gratifying. But like creating something that is 100% self-indulgent and not worrying about, is this going to please somebody else? Because like knowing you'll never post it is like, what if I just wrote about the things that go on in my head? What if I just spent the time working on them? And it also calls to mind the idea of like the best first draft is the one that is written, which harkens to the thing that you always say, which is the best breakfast is the one you'll eat. I think about that all the time. It applies to everything. The best blank is the one you will actually do.
The best hike is the one that'll actually get you to the top.
Like, more, but even so, like, the best hike is the one that you'll go on. Like,
yeah.
The best draft is the one that is written. And, like, yeah, it's the whole concept of, like, seeing a good post gives you a dopamine rush. And I forget where I was listening to it, but they were saying that social media is an addiction in that you get a dopamine hit from a good post and then you keep scrolling and then eventually you see something you dislike. So you continue scrolling in the hopes that you will see another thing that you like, but you never know when to stop because the good dopamine rush makes you want to keep going to get more of it. Yeah. But then you encounter something you dislike and now you have to start over. And it like that dopamine, like rejection and approval and rejection and approval and rejection and approval, you can break by creating a serotonin process, which is a long duration of a thing that is consistent in your life that brings you happiness because of the consistency.
Yeah.
Writing for yourself gives you that. Reading fan fiction does not.
No, it does not.
It does not give you consistency. So like, I think that's also part of the beauty of fandom is that like, in one way, yes, it's about like the dopamine rejection and approval, but like the presence of like the Raven cycle in my life, that's serotonin to me. Like that is a thing that has stuck with me. That is a thing I think about often that I can engage in privately that like, it feels like fucking home to me, those characters. And sometimes I get to experience them on my dashboard in a way that I enjoy.
Yeah. So but are you writing the Raven cycle?
I have the Raven cycle fan fiction in my Google Drive. Yes, I do.
I have the Last of Us fan fiction in Google Drive that will never see the light of day.
I don't think my Raven cycle fan fiction will ever see the light of day because it is entirely like character indulgent. Like, I'm like, what if this scene happened? And then I write it down and it's like, ooh, now it did.
Yeah. I love that. Like, we did a whole fan fiction episode, so we don't need to reiterate
that. There will be
that.
Many more. And there will be more.
There will be more.
This, I actually don't know where this post is from. I'm not going to lie. It's on a Tumblr post, but I think it might be a screenshot of a LinkedIn post. Which is random to get good wisdom from. Somebody posted, just a daily reminder that care tasks are cyclical and morally neutral. A dirty stack of dishes or pile of trash is as morally neutral as an empty trash can or clean sink. Anytime you have a dirty space, it is because it is where you are currently at in the cycle, and that's okay. Moving into the next cycle is easier if you aren't attaching your self-worth or moral judgment onto cyclical tasks. And then someone replied, read the manifesto for maintenance art. And I think it applies to a lot of things, is that you shouldn't apply moral value to where you are in a cycle, which I mean, immediately comes back to the thing of like grief and joy. There is no lack of morality in experiencing grief. In fact, I think it's like incredibly important and it's obviously very, very hard in the moment, but like in reflections on grief, it's like you have to find a way to be like glad that you are able to experience
or at
grief.
Least neutral, at least.
Yes. You have to be able to strip the negativity away from like things that we've been taught are like morally reprehensible, like a dirty room or feeling bad about things. Like,
yeah,
none of these things are morally reprehensible. And if you can come to a place where they are neutral, then like neutral is so much more close to positive than feeling bad about them is.
Yeah. And the metaphor for me that comes to mind is, I mean, because I'm an artist, the ugly stage of a painting, there is an ugly stage. There can be multiple ugly stages for any painting, any drawing. I think it's rare that there is not an ugly stage. And I think a part of it is how we see art on social media, is like when people do time lapses, or just you see their feed of like something that's, you know, super specific style, you know, it's that. That is because those people are working the algorithm, not because they're perfect artists.
Yeah.
And I mean, that's why art is so like important. I mean, it is important to me, but it's why it helps me so much like deal with my emotions, is because it isn't just about like the art I'm creating, but the process of it like is kind of a life lesson, because you have to get through it, like, or you abandon it. And then what? Then it's abandoned. You might as
well
finish it.
And then the time passes anyway.
That time passes anyway. I might as well have another shit painting attached to the pile. Wait, speaking of, like, I wonder if I can unblur my background. I'll do it at the end if I can't. Because I have this huge, you can see this huge painting I have in the background. You can't see it. It's blurred, but it's at the ugly stage right now.
I think you're so right about the way that we have the opportunity to experience art because of social media is that nobody posts the ugly stage. Why would they?
No.
You know, that's not attractive enough for an algorithm. And really, like, the only other place other than social media that like most art is accessible to people is museums. And obviously all of those are finished and like renowned, or they wouldn't be there. Well, I guess they're not always finished. Sometimes they have unfinished works. And over the summer, I was lucky enough to go to a gallery that had a bunch of unfinished works from Gustav Klimt. And I loved seeing the paintings that were in their progress stages, where like a bunch of it looked like a whole bunch of nothing.
Yeah.
And it was so interesting to see in which order the artists approached their art, where like they had several unfinished portraits where he had completely done the like perfect, gorgeous face that looks like it was handed to you by an angel, right? Like absolutely glowing and soft and humanistic. And then around it, like random like rectangles of color where like you could tell he was just kind of figuring out what palette he wanted to do the rest of it in.
Yeah.
And like scratchy scribbles instead of outlines. Like it was not what you see people do in Procreate, where they post just like the outline of a drawing that has not been filled in yet. And like the layers, like it truly was a painting where like 9 square inches of it were absolute complete perfection. And the rest of it was like 30% done.
Yeah.
And that is so interesting, and also something that we are so robbed of because of social media, is seeing things when they are incomplete and a little bit ugly.
Yeah. And that's the joy of creation. This reminds me of another post I saw. There's been a meme format going around that's like, save me blank.
Yes.
Please save me. And I've seen some really good ones, actually. And one of them was, save me, joy of creation. Save me.
Like, joy, like, of literally creation, save me. I liked one the other day that said, Florence Welch, save me, Florence Welch.
No, actually. But speaking of that, I get a lot of good art advice on Tumblr. I also get really bad takes, but those are really easy for me to like. I have a pretty strong like moral foundation about art. Like I I take it really seriously.
And you and have I, that. Not That's swayed. Your right.
I'm not swayed by the terrible takes I see saying that art is just not that great. But a lot of them kind of focus around the process. And like, I mean, all we see is the finished pieces most of the time. And if you don't enjoy the process, like, you're setting yourself up for failure. Like, it's really hard to make art just for the final product, because that's a tiny, like, that happens in a split second. And then when it's done, it's done, and it exists in a different place. You're no longer creating something. And I look at my art a lot. Like, I love watching the time lapses, like, in Procreate. But sometimes it's like, oh, I see all the shapes that this painting has taken, and it is not all good.
Yeah.
Like, I'm constantly changing colors, or I'm erasing things, or like copy pasting, rotating, then having to redraw because it gets too pixelated. Like, but I don't always love it. I'm learning to love it, because that, you know, makes you make more art. And that's really the goal, isn't it? At least for me.
Yeah, I learned a lot about that during my poetry thesis, was that my thesis was not at all about what the poems looked like when they were quote unquote done. My entire like curriculum, my study, my final paper was all about what you learn about yourself during the process of revision. And how when you write something, you shouldn't go into it knowing what you're going to say. You go in with an idea, and then you let that idea reveal to you something true. And then once you've learned that true thing, you go back to the poem with new knowledge. And then you ask yourself, well, knowing this, what is the next true thing that I can say? And then you just do that over and over. And there's some quote, I could never remember who it's by, and I also, it's like contested who it's said by, but that a poem is never done, you simply walk away from it. That like, you can always reapproach a poem with a new piece of knowledge or a new feeling and change the whole thing, but eventually you do choose to walk away from it, but it's never like done.
Yeah, I feel the same way about paintings.
Right, there's always something new you could do to it.
And that makes it special. You know, it's never like on a fixed state, especially, yes. I mean, maybe less so with words, but with paintings and like, especially physical art, it does deteriorate. Like, and I got even some of my drawings from that I've, you know, done like a few years ago, like they're all smudged now. And I don't know, like, that's not a bad thing. Things change.
I mean, in that way of, the way that poetry deteriorates would be in the way that we use the language, right? Of like, people don't like all of Shakespeare poems anymore because they use a bunch of fucking words that nobody knows. Like, the language deteriorates, or oppositely, it evolves into something new. And like, I was listening to an episode of Ologies with someone who studies etymology, and they were saying that dictionaries are not about fixed definitions, but they're about updating definitions to how the word is actually used, because a word doesn't have a fixed definition, it has a use. And I was like, wow.
That's crazy.
I know. And like, that makes poetry even more exciting, right? Is that like, at one point in time, a word can mean something, and then 200 years later, it doesn't mean that thing anymore.
Yeah. I guess that's why we did poetry analysis, huh?
Period. I will share what is my last one, which is one that I harp on all the time. And so I won't even go deep into it because I know I'll say it again. But I actually think I've said it on this podcast before, if not in literally the last episode. maybe it was two episodes ago. But this is the thing that I told my therapist about, that some months ago she told me is her Roman Empire, when that was a thing on TikTok about like the thing that she thinks about constantly. Back in 2020 or 2021, I saw a TikTok when I was on Witch Talk from a creator who was practicing witchcraft or practicing, you know, something related to nature, maybe green witchery. Couldn't tell you. Wish I could find the TikTok for the life of me. I cannot. This was the person who introduced me to the idea of why New Year's resolutions are bullshit. And they were saying that New Year's resolutions don't make sense, not for the reason that I said earlier, which is that you can fail in 48 hours, but because winter, the dead of winter, the end of December into the beginning of January, nothing grows during that time. Nothing grows in the winter. I mean, sure, I guess if you live in the Southern Hemisphere, it's summer right now. So maybe they work in Australia. But yeah,
but it's summer for them.
Right.
It's not like, winter.
Nothing grows in the winter naturally. I mean, there are some plants, sure, but like most things are dead or in hibernation. And you should not expect yourself to be able to undergo an entire growth cycle overnight at a time where the ground is frozen, where it's dark outside, where your body is not actually supposed to be doing a lot of changing. You're supposed to be doing resting and, you know, like keeping your heart rate low so that you stay warm. Like it's the natural cycle of things does not encourage huge life change in the middle of winter. And they proposed instead that the way that you could align yourself closer with nature cycles in a way that will honestly help your life, and it has helped mine significantly, is that you follow the seasons and the solstices and the equinoxes, and those are times to set new goals. And you only set them for 3 months because they're not really going to work in the next season and the next cycle. Winter is for rest and for hibernation and reflection. Winter is really great for reflection. It's a really great time to lay in your bed and get warm and write in your journal and think about what happened to you in the last few seasons and what you would like from the next few seasons. But you don't have to do anything about it. You just have to let the soft animal of your body love what it loves.
Mary. No, but really,
always in a place of wild geese. I can't believe I just recited that out of the blue. Anyway,
no, but literally, yeah.
But yes, you just have to let the tender flesh of your body love what it loves. And then the spring is when you plant the seeds. That's, you know, how farming works. That's when things start to like expand their roots back out and start to like reach toward the sun. The spring is not when everything blossoms always. The spring is when things come back to life. And that's a really good time to start new habits, to put new things into place, to like, you know, work on the things that you thought about during the winter and really get them going. And then the summer is when everything like explodes. Summer is a great time to like work on yourself and to really take advantage of the fact that you have more daylight than ever. Like your body feels more energized because you have more sunlight to turn into serotonin, and you use that extra amount of daylight to like take advantage of things. And then in the fall, you reap the harvest of all those things that you spent time on and exerted yourself on through spring and summer. And the fall, you know, is when things start to dwindle back down. It's a beautiful season, but it's when you kind of take it all in of like, I just spent the last two seasons doing all these things and now look where I am. And inevitably, if you spend 6 months doing anything, you're going to get some result.
Yeah.
And in the fall, you reap the benefits of those results. And then you take another fucking break and reflect, and then you get to do that forever.
Yeah, we really don't leave any time for breaks in our society. Like,
no, it is ever. Evil. Capitalism is evil. Capitalism That's is why... the antithesis of joy.
You're right. That's why I'm spending all of winter under my heated blankie.
I'm spending all of my winter laying in my bed because my sciatica is flaring up.
Oh, I'm putting everybody on the heated blanket shit. It's...
Oh, I got a heating pad for Christmas so that I can lay on my back.
Nice. I My mom got me a heated blanket for Christmas. And originally I was like, I would have preferred a weighted blanket. I stand corrected. And now she asks me every day, have you used your heated blanket today? I'm like, yes, I've used it all day. And I don't have an empty outlet like on this side of the room. So I'm not using my heated blanket right now. And it is actually getting to me.
Well, then we gotta wrap this shit up.
We gotta wrap it up.
You have any other hope for the Tumblr girls?
I just wanted to shout out to the mental health advice that I've seen on Tumblr. Not all of it's good.
No.
Not all of it's good. And you have to take most of it with a grain of salt. But I have seen actually good tips for ADHD, like just stop trying to fight against it and just like things that like I've done. I don't say I have ADHD, but it all works, so the shoe fits. But this other one that I saw, it actually goes back to what we were saying before. Anxious girl shocked to discover that doing the thing she was so afraid of or so afraid to do was actually easier than she catastrophically anticipated in her head. And there's a whole thread about how to work with your anxiety and not try to be perfect. And it's something that like I've heard a lot, but hearing it in a funny post, like it does actually like enter my brain in a better way.
Yes. Nice dichotomy, idiot. Like, literally did
Idiot.
more for me than 2 months of medically subsidized therapy.
Crazy how that works. And then I've also seen a lot of content. I saved a meme that we will post on the Instagram, that a lot of people have been talking about, like what their goals in life are is just to basically have a good day. And I do
Yes,
love
I love
that.
these memes.
Like, yeah, me too. Like, especially when I'm in a state of stagnation, like, no job, I haven't even left my house in the past 3 days because it's been snowing. And I can still try to have a good day every day, even
Yes.
with everything else going on. Like, I don't
Yes.
always have to have a productive day, but you can have a good day without it being productive.
Productive does not equal good. Productivity is not more morally valuable. This is a lie that the capitalist system sells us, is that productivity is more morally just than relaxation is. Also, I did see that post that it was like, my goal is genuinely just to have a good day. What is my 5-year plan? Hopefully, have a good day.
Hopefully, like have as many good days as possible.
Yeah, like that's my 10-year plan, dude, is to have a fucking good day.
I have very little career aspirations. Like, whatever happens, happens.
As long as I have a good day, who gives a fuck?
Who gives a fuck?
How you spend your days is how you spend your life. So if you have some good days, then you have a good life.
Yeah. The only thing that's going on in my brain right now, this is my anxiety kicking in. It's just car crash, car crash, car crash. Is this how you know it's uncomfortable to have happy emotions for me right now?
You know, my therapist, I'm actually planning to write a Substack essay about this. I've begun writing it in my head, but soon it will be in the Google Docs. But my therapist tells me that I have as much an aversion to positive emotions as I do to negative ones because I am diagnosed bipolar. And because I have experienced elevated episodes, which the opposite of depressive episodes, I'm also scared of feeling good as much as I am as feeling bad. And what it results in is that I don't like feeling anything. And so I run away from anything that makes me feel anything. But you can't do that because joy is as necessary as grief. And, you know, when you grow up, have you seen that post that said, when you grow up a sad little girl, part of you will always be a sad little girl. I think about that often. And You know what? I will offer one final thing that I learned from Eliza McLam of Binchtopia, because that's always the place that I'm in. She offered some advice on an episode that when you have an intrusive thought, or like a bad thought or a thought that you label bad, it can be really revolutionary to ask yourself the question, and what if that were true? And so it's like, if you say, I'm wasting my day, then you go, and what if that were true? Sometimes your brain says, well, then I should start doing something with my day. And you go, okay, there's the answer then. And I've been practicing this skill with like, you know, oh, I'm feeling this really great thing. What if it's not real? What if it's in my head? And then I go, well, what if that were true? And I go, well, then I would need to let it run its course. And that's it. That's the end of the cycle. Is if that were true, then I would just have to let it happen.
That's actually an OCD therapy thing. Which,
and now, why did my therapist not teach me this when I was diagnosed with OCD?
No, like, especially because a lot of the times, like, obsessive thoughts like that, when you're trying to not do the compulsions, your compulsions will switch to then going through that cycle of, you know, oh, like, oh, if you have the thought, oh, I'm a terrible person, you go, oh no, that's not true. Well, what if it is? And then it's the back and forth. And by accepting that it could be true.
Yeah.
Then
asking yourself, and what if that were true? It releases a lot of things.
It does. Try it sometimes, listeners.
Try it sometimes. Ask yourself, and what if that were true? The most revolutionary one I ever did was, I forget what the impetus was, but I said, and what if that were true? And the answer was, well, then I would have to take care of myself. And I was like, well, regardless of whether that is true, I can do that either way so that my bases are covered.
Yeah.
I can't believe I went a whole episode without saying, well, yes.
Well, now you just did, so.
Exactly. I had to end it on a good note.
Right. Anything else?
I don't think so. Listeners, have hope. This year, we're practicing hope. We're not practicing mourning. We're practicing hope, and we're practicing joy. And we're going on Tumblr, and we're not engaging with the discourse. We're engaging with the things that make us feel hopeful, even when they're silly, especially when they're silly.
My one New Year's resolution is to have half of the Tumblr app blocked by the end of 2024.
That's not hard. You'll get there in like a couple of days if you go fast enough.
I've blocked like at least 20 people just today. And I didn't spend that much time on Tumblr. But it's because I was getting recommended the most vile shit.
You really are out here battling the turfs. And Tumblr.com is not going to do anything about it.
Nope. They're just going to keep putting it on my dash.
They're like, do you want to block someone else?
They're just giving it all to me. Yeah.
They're like, well, you won't see it anymore if you block all of them. So we have to help you locate them first.
Yeah. It's the long haul for sure.
It's the, you know, the Watership Down quote. If they catch you, they will kill you, but first they must catch you.
It's too true. Okay. Thank you so much for listening. We are so excited to have you here and hope you tune in again next time. In the meantime, you can follow us on social media. Our Instagram is @xtumblrgirlspod. We, of course, have a Tumblr. You can find us there at xpodcastgirls.tumblr.com. We kindly ask that if you're enjoying the pod, to give us a rate or review on Spotify or Apple Podcasts. It helps us connect with the rest of the world's ex-Tumblr girls. Come, join, be our bestie, and we will talk to you soon. Bye.
Bye.